Hello, welcome again to Conversations at the Whole Note. In this case, more properly, Conversations with the Whole Note, because we're at Massey College in the University of Toronto, and my guest is Susie LeBlanc, who is here for an event this evening that was the lucky context for being able to do this interview. Thank you.
Hey, welcome.
This is the CD that's the reason for your visit to Toronto on this particular occasion, and I thought that's where we would start.
Yes.
I am in need of music, songs and on poems by Elizabeth Bishop, and this was for you something that occupied a lot of your time in 2011, particularly?
Yes, I would say even sooner than that. Mm-hmm. The project had a gestation period of about 7 years, mm-hmm. because it started just with me meeting or finding out about Elizabeth Bishop in 2007, mm-hmm. and now the CD being released this year. So, long project, yes.
And 2011 was the centenary of her birth.
Yes, that was the focus, of course. There was a woman I met called Sandra Berry just mm-hmm. soon after I came across the name Elizabeth Bishop and her poems, that I didn't know about her at all before that. In 2007, I found this leaflet in Great Village, and soon after I met Sandra Berry, who is an independent scholar, who is a poet, who knows everything there is to know about Elizabeth Bishop, who wrote a biography of her recently, who was published in 2011. She'd had a dream. Elizabeth Bishop was born in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. and so she was American by birth. She spent a lot of time in Great Village, Nova Scotia as a child, and three of her grandparents were Canadian, were actually Maritimers. And she always wanted to be Canadian. She wrote, "I'm three quarters Canadian and one quarter New Englander." And she stuck to that story. She's very attached to this land, which was like her motherland. And Sandra Berry, having, you know, researched the connection, the very deep connection Bishop had to Nova Scotia, wanted for the centenary to find, or to ask one Canadian composer to set music to a poem by Bishop. It was a way of bringing Bishop home, mm-hmm. a way of honoring her Canadian identity. And when I found the leaflet, I was looking for a special project to celebrate my 50th birthday.
Okay.
And I didn't know what it was going to be, but I was on the lookout for something. And finally, I came across this leaflet about Bishop and got interested and went and researched and found a poem, and just one thing led to another, and I suddenly thought, I love this poet's words,
his
I love her
voice.
Vision, I love her voice. Mm. This would be words I would love to sing.
Do you remember what that first poem
was? Yes, absolutely. It was The Map.
Uh-huh.
And there's one line in there that says, or does the land... what is it? Oh God, I have to remember it now. Or does the land lean in to support the water from underneath? Something like that. Talking about the shoreline.
Right.
And to lift the water from underneath is how she puts it. And you know, I've watched shorelines my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And never had I thought to look at it as the land lifting the water from underneath. And I just thought, what a wonderful vision. And everything, she likes to look at the world through inverted eyes. She was fascinated by the underneath, the unseen.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, when I found that poem, I decided to go further, and I met Alistair MacLean, who is now one of the composers who set this piece.
Is he from Cape Breton?
He's not. He's from Nova Scotia, though, originally. And he led me to Sandra Berry, because he was already a Bishop fan, and he knew about this woman. And so when Sandra and I met, our both dreams kind of connected, and we said we could do something very special for the centenary.
Mm-hmm.
Not only did we do this recording, but many, many events throughout the year 2011 in Nova Scotia. A literary symposium, a film competition, a literary competition, many, many concerts, visual arts exhibitions. One concert we did with was a Baroque music, because Bishop loved Baroque really? Music. So I found out there's strange. Another. That's she strange. Played the clavichord and carried one all her life. Wherever she moved, she'd lug along this clavichord, and she uh-huh. studied in England with Ralph Kirkpatrick. It was an amazing connection.
That's astonishing. So yeah. you found these interweavings and these threads. It must have been yeah. very affirming of your decision.
It was,
decision
and they were
do this.
Absolutely. They were surprising, some of them, and so we did this one performance of Baroque music, reading her poetry and interweaving music through it with R.H. Thompson reading mm-hmm. The poems, and then we did a tour of it with Harry Thurston reading because we couldn't get R.H. for the tour. Both projects were fantastic. So. There was so much creativity, so much inspiration, and she continues to inspire. I mean, this CD has 11 settings, 10 right. settings, sorry, with one instrumental piece.
By four
Canadian composers who are wonderful. There's Christos Hatzis, mm-hmm. Alistair MacLean, who I've mentioned, Emily Doolittle, right. and John Plant.
Right.
And they were obviously extremely inspired. Beautiful, beautiful works.
I loved this story that when Alistair started, the first thing that happened reading the, that's why I asked if he was from Cape Breton, when
yes.
he read the poem called Cape Breton,
yes.
it inspired him to do an instrumental
yeah.
piece. And so, in fact, his first connection with the poetry, and which is the first track on
yes.
the CD,
has no
words to it.
It's true. It's on one line of Cape Breton, which is mm. the silk and water is weaving and weaving.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of the most, I think it's just a masterpiece of instrumental work. It is. Mm-hmm. It sets the tone
it
for
does.
The CD.
It's lovely.
It's beautiful. I mean, Elizabeth Bishop, you could, arguably, you could just look at her poetry just for the metaphors about water mm-hmm. everywhere, and they're
birds.
Amazing. Or birds, mm-hmm. places in general. The way she describes land mm-hmm. makes you connect to it in a very special way.
Mm-hmm.
No preaching, but
messages that
yes.
lift the water, so to speak.
Absolutely. There's never anything, it's so simple, it's so down to earth. Somehow her connection and her love for a place then somehow transpires through the poem to make you connect to it in a way that maybe even if you've lived there, you might not have seen it that way. Mm. Yeah.
The poem that grabs me by the heart, and I would have to say the piece of music on it that grabs me by the heart most is The Short, Slow Life.
I'm so glad you say that.
That we live in a pocket of time.
Yes.
And I found myself thinking this was a project that gave you a pocket of time to live in at
That's true.
A moment where you maybe needed that for a lot of reasons.
I realize that now. In retrospect, I realize how much I was looking for maybe, I don't know if you call her a mentor or a role model, but Bishop definitely served to this kind of model at a time where I was wanting to change things artistically in my life and even personally and definitely and that is a lovely, lovely poem
mm-hmm.
Until time's roughed hand reached in and tumbled us out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, fantastic.
And such a wonderful weaving of the words and I loved that setting so much because there was no sense of conflict or sense of having to cater, and it's ironically the shortest of the poems,
yes.
and yet it is so complete and such a challenge, a lovely
yes.
challenge for
no,
you.
No, absolutely, a challenge, but I mean this was the piece by Emily Doolittle, the only piece she wrote. She actually won a prize for it in the States, so I'm very happy for her, and it's amazing what she did with that poem. I mean, because it was a short poem, I was kind of imagining a short little piece, and it's not that
almost
at all.
10 minutes.
Yes, mm-hmm. and somehow she rhythmically did very interesting things, and with repetition, there is melody as well. But it's somehow a poem that is like nature or something. It just a little leaf here, a little. fluff of something there, and exactly. and not unlike, actually, Bishop was a painter as well, and not unlike, you know, the way she might have painted nature herself. No, I think it's a very successful.
You wouldn't know the Canadian if you go onto the internet. She's certainly been reappropriated by the United States. If
very
you go look
so.
At Wikipedia and. You wouldn't get a glimpse of that blue-eyed North at all in the way she's been reclaimed as a kind of latter-day Robert Frost.
Yes. Well, and you can't blame them for wanting her. I mean, she's absolutely one of the most important poets of the 20th century. And in England, in Australia, in many countries, in Japan even, she's been translated and is read. That's why this is actually a historical project, and a very important one, because it was so important to her, and so, I think it's nice for Canadians to know about her.
Right. You said you were in need of some kind of a mentor, and you actually literally followed her footsteps, you and Linda Dornan,
yes.
whose video is also part of the package. You went to Newfoundland. Is that a journey that she herself made?
Yes. It's one of the first things I found out when I went to read the map, the first poem. I also got out a little biography. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things I read was that she had taken a walking trip to Newfoundland when she was 21 years old with a friend. Now, two girls in 1932 choosing to go to Newfoundland on a walking trip, it seems a little bit unusual. And that obviously gave me an idea, too, of the kind of person she was. I don't know why she chose Newfoundland. There's lots of people speculating on why. She had an incredible love of islands. So maybe that was an attraction. Maybe it was a bit of a remote thing to do. She crossed the Avalon Peninsula.
Uh-huh.
Before that, she went to Belle Island and to Fairyland, which is on the East Coast Trail.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd already walked the East Coast Trail about 5 years before, 4 years before. So I always was attracted to the East Coast of Newfoundland and thought, now I like to immerse myself in projects in a three-dimensional way, and I love to walk. So why not go for a walk, take Bishop's poems with me, and read it. As much as I can from her letters, from her prose. Also, she's got lovely stories of prose, not just poetry. And acquaint myself with this lady who so fascinates me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. The amazing thing about the walk is that because Elizabeth had not walked alone, and I'd been on a lot of walks by myself, and I was time for a change too, so I decided I had to go with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be staying with a documentarist and video and visual artist called Linda Ray Dornan, who's from Sackville, New Brunswick, was actually from Montreal but lives in Sackville, New Brunswick. And I told her about this idea, and lo and behold, a few months later, she called me up and said, "Do you still want to go for that walk? Can I document it?" So we went out, and it's now paired with the CD as a little bonus DVD for 36 minutes of two women in 2008 following exactly where Bishop went, because she kept a journal. So we had all the information of who she stayed with and descriptions in the journal, which is absolutely amazing. I'll just give you one instance. We were in, Holyrood in Newfoundland, and we met the village historian, Joe Byrne. Now, Joe Byrne, she had stayed with his parents, and she wrote in her diary a description of a lady who was hiding up in a window, and who was bandaged in the face, and they brought her food occasionally, and she just stared at the window at people, and it was a sort of an eerie thing. And when he read that bit, tears, he started to cry, because that was his aunt who had cancer of the face. And she was writing about his family, and somehow he was deeply touched.
This linking of the personal and the historic, and the sense of it being meant to be in some way.
Yeah.
It was interesting in the notes to this, where you zero in the notes on this, you talk about Nova Scotia as her motherland.
Yes.
And I was thinking about that and reflecting on the fact that you had done one CD of Acadian music before and now another after, and wondering what this is as a pivot, because that choice of motherland, and you use the phrase again today, is very interesting.
You mean my motherland?
Your
being...
motherland, that yes. resonance, whether yes. this is part of the whole discovery of it all.
Well, interesting, because that's true. I mean, that was in 2004 that I needed to reconnect with my motherland, Acadia, mm-hmm. and did the first La Mer Jolie, mm-hmm. and then in 2008 did Tupas. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I'm done with my motherland. I may be doing another one. We're recording it in January 2014. But yes, it's interesting that, and I've managed to connect Bishop to her motherland as well.
Absolutely.
Yes.
When you said she carried a clavichord with her, for me the resonance was, in a way, thinking of when you went to Montreal. It was not as with vocal music in mind when you started either.
No.
I was
a harpsichord player.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. that also seems to strike a chord as well.
Absolutely.
So this is lovely, and it's a CD that I hope people will listen to. I wanted to cover some other stuff.
Sure.
We'll have to do it sort of breathtakingly quickly in this context now, but you're back with us at least a couple of times.
Yes,
you're
this
back
month.
With Tafel Music, mm-hmm. And you'll be singing with who in that one?
With Charles Daniels, tenor, okay. who's lovely. It's a program of Purcell songs and Kerasimi's oratorio Yefta.
Okay,
which is beautiful.
And then back again later in the month with Women's Musical Club
yes.
of Toronto.
Yes.
I'll dig up the dates later on.
They've yeah, I think it's the 21st.
21st.
And that's with Les Voix Humaines.
Who are some of your closest Montreal
Absolutely, absolutely. A group I've worked with a lot.
And the repertoire for that one?
It's varied, actually. It goes from about Purcell to Gershwin, which is an interesting thing. And the Voix Humaines love to have music arranged for the four gambas. It's a quartet of gambas.
Right.
And so it's fun to do. We were doing some French songs like Autumn Leaves, Les Feuilles Mortes.
Mm-hmm.
It's very eclectic and lovely. It's called Summertime because we're also doing Summertime,
right.
Of course, and spans all sorts of eras, but throughout there's the Vivaldi Four Seasons played by the gambas.
And that's with Susie Napa, Margaret Little, Felix
Deek and Mélisande Corriveau.
Okay,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
And that's very much, so that's the next question I find myself wondering about is, we've talked about motherlands and homelands and musical homelands.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering about that, because for a long time, early and Baroque was very much your...
My home
I would
turf.
Call it your musical homeland,
yes.
where you were able to find the right size for your own voice,
yes.
I think. Very strongly?
I think it was more that it was the music I was passionate about, mm-hmm. and my voice happened to fit it very well. But I think you fit your voice to what you love as well,
mm-hmm.
in a way, because now things are changing, because my love has become a leader a lot. Richard Strauss mm-hmm. is now something I'm really spending a lot of time, Schumann, Schubert,
mm-hmm.
French Melody with Fauré, Reynaldo Hahn, Debussy. So that is, yeah, it just happened, you know, I didn't... call on that, but the passion suddenly came for that music, and the passion also for contemporary settings, contemporary music, and working with maybe the desire to work with people who are alive, you know.
Uh-huh.
Although
in a funny way, a lot of modern repertoire is as interpretive as a lot of Baroque and
yes,
early, because you do not have everything
yes.
so rigorously written down. There is an interpretive and almost ornamental function required
sure.
in both contexts, because
depending
the composers haven't heard it either.
That's right, and these composers were amazingly open to suggestions, and that was wonderful.
How did that work? I was listening, and I was, in terms of the commissioning, did I know when people are composing for instrumental, you know, you're aware of the range of the instrument, and you either challenge it or you don't, but I was listening to all those lovely G's and A's and B's soaring around at the top of it. And is that something where you talked about that ahead, or did they just listen and instinctively tune into that?
I believe John Plant and Alistair and Christos, I think, knew my my singing, knew my voice.
Okay.
And they went and listened to things. And we never talked about anything like that.
Uh-huh.
Emily was the one who I knew the least.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, when peace first came, there were bits that were just not quite fitting. Mm-hmm. So we talked about it. And we changed some notes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Just a few, though.
Oh, yes. But they were necessary to change.
Yeah, it's lovely. The bird image is so powerful to me, going back to Bishop, and I found myself thinking, well, maybe Messiaen's in the picture somewhere too.
Well, I have recorded Messiaen.
Oh,
yes, I recorded pieces that are not often done. Chant de terre et de ciel, which is a cycle,
mm-hmm.
For piano and voice, a bit like Poème pour me, but a much less well-known one.
Mm-hmm.
That came out on Atma in 2009,
oh.
And a lot of early songs, and a lovely a piece, La Mort du Nombre, which I did with Lawrence Williford. And it's a beautiful tenor soprano piece. So I love Messiaen as well. So there you go.
So now that you've been tumbled out of this particular pocket of time, where do you find yourself?
It's an amazing feeling to finally tumble out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually working on a new project. Well, a few of them, actually. I'm working on a project which is going to be honoring my mother, who was a singer.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'll do in the summer of 2014 and subsequently, which will be with film, with visuals. She passed away in 2003. She was an opera singer.
Mm-hmm.
She sang the music that I'm now singing that I never thought I would sing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we now sing the same songs, and I find it very interesting. And we have recordings of her. She had actually won the Singing Stars of Tomorrow in 1948. And so she was actually really well known to Toronto audiences then. I have lots of letters, and I want to tell her story because she left home when she was 12. She already had an operatic voice. She went on to study and give concerts at the age of 15. She came from a tiny village, and if I can inspire any young person who thinks, well, you know, I have dreams, but I come from this tiny place and there's just no hope, that you can always do something. There's always a way. And she kept on singing and teaching all her life, and I think it's a wonderful project to do.
We're going to have to leave it here for today, but this shouldn't be the last. We'll talk again.
I hope so.
And thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you all. And we'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.